From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's one thing to struggle to be able to afford food, but even when people have the resources, there are places in Illinois where it's hard to find fresh and healthy food. They're known as food deserts, though, as we'll hear, even that phrase is up for revision. We'll talk about that later this hour. And it sounds like science fiction, but actual scientists at Northwestern University have found a way to communicate with people who are sleeping through their dreams. This discovery has implications for our waking lives. We'll talk about that later as well. But first, there's been a lot of action in Washington this week. Yesterday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the For the People Act, aimed at reversing restrictions on voting rights in many states. But like so many other items on the Democratic agenda, it faces an uphill climb in the Senate. Also yesterday, authorities warned of another plot to breach the Capitol building. This led House leaders to cancel a scheduled session today. Meanwhile, Central Illinois Congressman Rodney Davis is scheduled to meet with President Biden today to talk about infrastructure. To talk about a busy week in Washington and how it relates to us back here in Illinois, earlier this morning I spoke with U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. He joined me from Washington via Zoom on his iPad.
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Good.
How are you this morning?
Just terrific. Thanks. How about you?
Good. I can't complain. Because this conversation was pre-recorded, we're not taking calls, but we do always like to hear what you think about our conversations. Email us at talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here's my conversation with Democratic U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. Senator Durbin, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
Good to be with you.
I want to begin by asking if you are safe today. I saw the House canceled its session owing to another possible plot to breach the Capitol. Is the Senate still meeting?
Senate is meeting. And if you saw the United States Capitol and currently what we have for protection, it's hard not to feel safe. It's disappointing because there is a 10-foot fence around the perimeter of the Capitol. And I'm not just talking about the building. Several city blocks away from the building, the perimeter starts. It has razor wire on top of it, closely guarded and limited access. It is a sad commentary on where we are in America.
Well, I want to stick to the theme of domestic terrorism. This is obviously the security fencing relates to what happened on January 6th there. You're now chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And as the New York Times recently noted, it's the first time you've held one of these crucial chairman positions after nearly four decades in Congress. This week, you had FBI Director Christopher Wray before the committee. And you'd recently accused the Bureau of minimizing the threat of white supremacists and far-right violence. What did you make of Director Wray's response to that critique?
It's a new day, and it was a revelation that he did not mince words. When we talk about the security of the United States of America, we should never, ever reach a point where we don't take into consideration the threat of international terrorism. 9/11 is emblazoned in our memories. But he made it clear the threat today is not across the ocean, it's across the street. And it's domestic, homegrown terrorism, most of it racially motivated, are motivated in anti-Semitism or a hatred of other groups. And we're taking it very seriously. It's high on the priority list now.
On this point, Attorney General nominee Merrick Garland has said investigating the January 6th insurrection would be his top priority if confirmed. Will he be confirmed? What is taking so long with that?
Well, he will be confirmed. He was reported by the committee with a 15-7 vote. Four Republicans joined us in a bipartisan vote supporting him. And I think there'll be more on the floor. No question that it'll pass. The ordinary course of events in the Senate takes days for a person to clear the calendar. And his nomination is delayed by the fact that we are in the middle of the Biden American Rescue Plan, and it's a high priority to get it done. But I've no doubt that sometime, probably early next week, he will be approved.
Okay, well, that's a good point then to transition into the status of COVID relief legislation. There was reporting yesterday that President Biden was acceding to the requests of moderate Democrats on narrowing eligibility for stimulus checks. If I understand it correctly, it's to people making $75,000 a year or less instead of $100,000. And then there are higher limits for people with children and couples. Where are you on this? Are there too many compromises being made, or is this just the way things have to be done?
This is the way the world works in the United States Senate. And I don't believe these requests are unreasonable. Under the previous formula for the distribution of cash payments, there was a potential for someone to receive some payment, even if they had a family income of $300,000. That to me was unnecessary and just this short of outrageous. So I hope that we can come up with a formula which is not only fair to working families, but we'll bring together the Democratic caucus. At this moment, we don't have a single Republican who has spoken out in favor of the Biden rescue plan.
And in fact, the Republicans seem to be presenting a united front in opposition. I saw one of your Republican colleagues quoted calling this legislation a boondoggle, and they seem to be working to at least slow it down. And meanwhile, the clock is ticking on pandemic unemployment benefits set to expire in less than 2 weeks. Do you have a sense of when this will be resolved, when listeners, if they're eligible for stimulus checks, when they can expect to see that relief from the government?
They can expect to see it in a matter of days, and that's the way it should be. March 14th is the deadline. But let me say a word about Republican support. Last year, in the beginning of this pandemic, the Trump administration sent Treasury Secretary Mnuchin to negotiate with Congress, Democrats and Republicans. In March of last year, they came up with a plan which was the largest spending bill in the history of the United States, over $2 trillion. And it was needed for the pandemic and for the economy and to help businesses survive. I want to remind your listeners that bill passed 96 to nothing. Every single Democrat supported the Mnuchin plan. Then in December, we had a second round, $900 billion, a substantial bill. Mnuchin, Trump's Secretary of the Treasury, again negotiated it with the Democrats and Republicans. Every single Democrat supported this Mnuchin plan. That is a fact. Now comes a new president, Joe Biden, who says, we've got to finish the job. We have to finish strong. Our economy advisors are telling us that if we falter, this economy could fall into a slump and stay there for not just months, but years. We don't have a single Republican who's willing to step up. Now, spending money on this national challenge is called a boondoggle. I don't get it.
Well, in this attitude does not bode well then for other priorities of the Democratic Party. The House, as you know, last night passed the For the People Act. This is sweeping voting rights legislation, among other things. But like so many progressive priorities, it faces what one news outlet called exceedingly long odds in the Senate. What do you say to progressives who are frustrated and will continue to be frustrated by the filibuster and frankly, by some of your moderate colleagues in the Democratic caucus?
I understand their frustration. I share it. I live it. And I have for a long time. And the Senate is an institution which demands first patience over everything else. And you get impatient at times. I'm impatient. There are bills that I've had that have foundered in the light of the filibuster for years and years. I say to my progressives, the first rule in politics is you've got to learn how to count. We have a 50-50 Senate. We're in a situation where changing the rules takes a majority. If any Democrat, in this case several, unfortunately, from my point of view, have said they're not ready to change the rules. The point we want to make through our agenda in the Senate is that important legislation is going to be held up or stopped because of that. We think that will be persuasive to some to join us in changing the rules in the right way.
Is the total elimination of the filibuster still something you're willing to consider should the Republicans prove too much of an obstacle to doing much of anything in the rest of this session?
We have a handful of options. And I've been working on them for several months with Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon. We talked about them just a couple days ago. And at some point, we can consider modifications to the current rules, short of ending the filibuster completely, but at least limiting its application. I want the Senate to remain the Senate, but before we completely eliminate the filibuster, we ought to consider alternatives.
I want to remind listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. And Senator Durbin, from time to time, we do solicit questions from listeners. We got one from Steve in Lake Zurich, Illinois, who asks about Biden proposals for legal immigration and increasing the number of legal immigrants. And Steve writes, at a time of high unemployment among Americans and a need to conserve energy and protect the environment, isn't this the wrong time to dramatically increase legal immigration?
Every year, the United States brings in 1 million new people, new immigrants into this country, year in and year out, the economy up, the economy down. And it turns out that we have 11 million in this country now who are undocumented. That doesn't mean that they are criminals. They're not, by and large. It's a very small percentage that would be in that category, if any. It doesn't mean that they're not working. Many of them are. Some of them are working and paying taxes, though still undocumented. And there are categories of workers that we just can't fill the jobs with Americans. Bring the farmers and ranchers and people who own orchards and fields with vegetables and fruits into the room and let them tell you the story. There aren't a lot of Americans lining up to do this work. When it comes to the meat processing, poultry processing plants, they are overrun with people who are new to this country because those are tough, dirty, sweaty, dangerous jobs. The point I'm making is that if we are thoughtful in the way we do this, we can not only serve the economy without in any way harming or threatening American jobs, and we can also bring in people who will give us an opportunity to expand the economy, people who have entrepreneurial ideas that create businesses. That is the story of America, and we shouldn't ignore it. It is the reality.
And sticking with the theme of immigration, you have been sponsoring the DREAM Act for as long as I've been covering you as a reporter, certainly, I think about 20 years now. 20 years. So, and this is for people who need a refresher, this would give a path to legal citizenship for young people who came here as children, were often brought here by their families, had no say in the matter. I noticed when you reintroduced it, there was a statement, your longtime co-sponsor, Senator Lindsey Graham, basically said, I don't think this bill is going to pass in this form. I thought that was rather extraordinary to see. Are you at all optimistic, more optimistic now than you have been in the past? Where are you on the prospects for the DREAM Act?
First, let me say, I'm glad to have Lindsey as a co-sponsor. He's been a faithful co-sponsor, the only Republican I can count on to co-sponsor it. So when many of my friends start their litany of complaints against Lindsey Graham, I do not join in that chorus. He has stood by me on the DREAM Act and has done it again. And what he said is true. If we're going to move this from 50 Democratic votes plus his to 60 votes and weather the parliamentary storm on the floor, we need more Republican support. And that means adding provisions to the bill. Let me give you an example. A provision that passed is likely to pass the House in the next few days is for farm labor, just what I mentioned before. And there are Republican senators from rural states who value this very much. And we're hoping that if we include it with the DREAM Act, they'll be favorably inclined to support both.
I know your time is limited this morning, so I do also want to ask you, earlier we were talking about federal law enforcement. I want to return to that. You repeatedly urged President Biden to keep U.S. Attorney John Lausch in place in northern Illinois, but there was not a similar push for John Millhiser in the Central District. He's now out of that job. I'm wondering why the difference there.
Well, I can tell you, first, I respect both of them very much, and they're both people of integrity and honesty and very professional. I supported John Millhiser. In fact, I fought for him to get that position in Central Illinois, facing some resistance in the Trump White House. But we prevailed, and he got the job, and I think he did a good job. There's no question in my mind. He called me. He understood that all of the U.S. attorneys across the United States were being asked to resign, and he was prepared to accept that fate and told me as much. I will tell you, John Lausch had a different circumstance. He's in the midst of, as we all know, a comprehensive investigation involving political figures in Illinois. I wanted to give him an opportunity to complete that investigation and wherever it leads, and Senator Duckworth joined me. We both asked the Biden White House to give him a chance to continue in that job until we've chosen a successor. That is likely to be a matter of months. but we don't want to interrupt the work that he's doing.
Last thing I want to ask you about, last night your congressional colleague Robin Kelly won the race to succeed Michael Madigan as chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois. You were Congresswoman Kelly's most prominent backer. Where do you want to see the party go under her leadership?
Well, let me just say that contest was very close, but and that was last night. I'm not focusing on yesterday, I'm focusing on tomorrow. I want her to expand the base of the Democratic Party and not to take for granted our successes at the polls and assume they're going to continue forever. We have to work for votes. We have to have a winning message. And I believe that Robin Kelly can lead us in that regard. My highest priorities are the reelection of Tammy Duckworth and Governor J.B. Pritzker. And I'll be working for that goal as much as I can.
Senator Dick Durbin, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us today on the 21st.
It's good to be with you.
Coming up after a short break, we're going to be talking about food deserts in southern Illinois. Then later in the program, communicating with people in their dreams. All that after a short break here on the 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. Whether you're just starting out or upgrading to your dream home, Busey can guide you every step of the way because they know there's no place like home. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.